Wow, there's a lot of people in here. Good evening, everybody. First off and first more, my name is Dominic Guest. I'm an alcoholic. Amen. Praise God, because I could not be here without mine. Before you is standing a miracle of his creation, first and foremost. I'd like to congratulate all the token takers. Anybody here with their ass falling off getting a meeting because they need it. I'd like to welcome all of our visitors to the San Diego way of doing things. God bless you all, and I hope you get something out of what we have here tonight. A little bio of where I come from and who I am. I come from a very military regimented family. Eight children. I'm number six in the line of eight. I'm the youngest, the shortest, and the smallest of five boys in my family. My father is a retired drill instructor from the Marine Corps. My first drink was moonshine. I was born here in San Diego. My father received a promotion from being a drill instructor here, and we were transferred to Parris Island, South Carolina, where I was raised. And my father, who being the Marine he was, had an ongoing, constant still in the backwoods. And being the hillbillies that we were, being raised there in the South, it's just second nature to have that on hand. My brothers and I created all kinds of chaos. My largest brother is 6'11 and a half, to me being the shortest. And there's always, with that many brothers, always competition of like levels unprecedented. And me being the youngest, I had to aspire to bigger things, and you know. So I became quite the practical jokester. I became quite the idiot of the group. First drink at 8 years old, moonshine, and it fast-tracked all through my high school years and everything. Then I chose to join the Marine Corps. Let me rewind a little bit to 12. You know, I'm a firm believer that in every culture on our globe, there's a coming of man ceremony that takes place between 10 and 14 of any and every citizen. Okay? Well, of mine, it was August 17th of 1975. I was held accountable for my father getting shot for beating my mother up. I had come home from church. I got tired of the chaos. I walked back and I put three rounds inside of a 30-06, and I walked back into the kitchen and I told him to stop. I was 12. I garnished things from the media, from TV, and things that we had seen back then. All I wanted was the chaos to stop. I didn't pull the trigger deliberately. I tripped on a rift in the rug and it accidentally went off. But I was held accountable for it. And it dictated the course of my life for many decades. Many. The system, immediately being placed in it, deemed me this ridiculous idiot. And I was housed with another delinquent and went on through my early years of school and high school and whatnot. Because of that incident, I was forced to be counseled by these brain pickers on a regular basis because they thought I'd be one of these, what we have going on a daily nowadays, one of these little kids that just get out of hand. Well, I flipped the script and I started picking their brains. And I became a master manipulator behind drinking moonshine still, sneaking and squirreling away, smoking weed and everything that would come through the bayous and the swamps. And I became this individual of nothing but window dressing. I became exactly what I needed to be for the crowd of people that I was in. Then I joined the Marine Corps. And I found out that, through all my early years and all, with my family and all, I was the ugly duckling. I was the one that got beat. I was the one that got kicked. All this stupid crap. But when I got out on my own in the Marine Corps and I started traveling abroad, I went to Japan. I was stationed there for 2 years. I went to Lebanon, you know. But all throughout the time, I had people approaching me, women. Say, oh my God, you're like the finest man we've ever. What? Yeah, me? What are you talking about? And I ended up getting this ego. And this whole thing being fed by drugs and alcohol, by ego and pride, just erupted into this thing that I became. I left the Marine Corps illegally after Lebanon. I had $50 plates crafted while I was over there. I hid in my footlocker when I came back to the States illegally on space available flights that I made the tickets for. I went to Chicago with this, and I worked for a group of people spelled M-O-B. And yes, it was quite the, I had a lot of fun. To the tune of about $8 million. And going through the 80s, that's quite a bit of money back then. I would pony up on people, and I would manipulate them to the point where I would get them in debt. And then I would force them to do things that they never imagined they'd have to do. A couple of young ladies that were workers for a footlocker store, for my birthday one year, got me a book and gave it to me. And they said, this is what we think of you. In the early 90s, they made a movie about it. It's called Catch Me If You Can by Franklin W. Abigail Jr. You know, I'm really nervous up here. Usually I'm not, but there's a whole lot of people here. So I made all this money. We laundered it through tattoo parlors and beauty salons. We opened clubs. One of them was called Tootie Toots. We had a boxing ring for a dancing floor. It was a lot of fun. I picked up my first prison term in the state of Illinois. I got out, and I manipulated not only my parole officer, not only the female prosecutor, but also the female judge. And when the PO found out that I had taken my wills and my wanes with the judge, she pulled me in and said, check it out. I will lose your file. Leave the state. I came back to California, and I sought out my real mother. Unfortunately for me, that I did not know at the time, I'm the spitting image of my father. And she ended up having an episode and called the police on me, telling them that I was a fugitive from another state. I pulled out ID that I'd manufactured and said, check this out. I don't know who this woman is. And I went about my merry way. And I started making a name for myself throughout the West Coast. I have nicknames that stretch from here to there, all over. From Nick the Greek, the animal, the beast, to several different other ones. You know, going back to that one day where a rifle went off and I shot my father, it dictated the course of all of this. I started picking up prison terms in this state. And I wasn't given the luxury of a level one killer with keys to the fire truck and a gate pass. I went to places behind the wall. That's where there is no chain link fences. That's where there is no cameras. This is places that we go to where the society doesn't want us to be seen or heard from again. I picked up shoe terms when I was found not to be suitable to be on GP yards because I was very cultural. I was very political inside of those arenas. I aspired to being a leader. I used my military tactics to doing it. And in that arena, I made more names for myself. I stand before you now with a resume stretching 12 prison terms and 3 state numbers. 33 years of my adult life given freely to the Department of Corrections. My clean date, the last day I used was June 8th, 2011. My clean date is June 9th, 2011. On June 8th, I was sitting in North County Court dressed in a double-breasted Armani suit, dressed to the nines, and I was just found guilty again for deceptive practice, for forgery, for conspiracy to commit commercial burglary, for trying to pass a $6,000 check. You know, all these things that I learned throughout going through the world and the travels, nothing came Nothing came to the point of giving me the relief I needed from my addictions and my isms, most importantly, from myself. On that day, though, I had one of those luxury moments that some of you don't get, a burning bush moment. The Holy Spirit came to me in that holding cell and said, "Check it out, stupid. Get out of the driver's seat. Let me handle this for you. Let me show you how this is done." And at that point, I made a decision, a cognitive decision, to turn my will and my life over to the power of my God, Jesus Christ, and give all the commitment that I'd ever done in criminality, in alcoholism, in drug addiction, and all of the shenanigans that I'd ever done to that point. For the next 2 years, I sat in North County jail up there doing this dog and pony show of AB 109, which is a new thing about being sentenced to stuff. They had to have a whole bunch of people come together and have a hearing about me being the first person being sentenced to that new dog and pony show with more than 5 years. I was given an 8-year prison sentence inside county jail. I was found guilty of 2 charges of the 9 I was originally convicted of at that trial. And those 2 charges, I got 2 years for. But because of my prison priors, they enhanced it by another 6. I thought I'd be real smartass, and I appealed the sentencing. I got so excited when they granted it. Yeah, I got them. Yeah, I didn't even understand what was going on. And I served the first 2 years right there in county jail and turned my hair from a brown, which you have, to a peckerwood chrome, which I sport now. Please pardon some of my vernaculars. I'm really trying to get some comedy or some laughter going so I can get a little more ease, so I can get some flow here. I'm really nervous. You see, there's a certain responsibility to coming up here and being able to share and being able to speak. There may be somebody out here that really needs to hear a message of hope and change instead of about the mess. You know, standing before you is a miracle of God, literally from Saul to Paul, in my opinion. Today, I have opportunities and situations at my disposal in comparison to drama and chaos of which I used to cause and create. I've been charged and convicted for anything from the top of the list to just about like 10 of them from the bottom. Just saying. And I'm not saying that to brag or anything or to impress anybody. I'm just saying it so it's the institutionalized paradigm. We become so immersed and conditioned to it, it becomes second nature. There were times throughout that 33 years, okay, here's an idea. Collectively, between the 12 prison terms, 2 years, collectively, I was on the streets between all of that time. To give you an idea of how recidivism really gets ingrained in us, I come out, I go to the casino, I acclimate myself to people, start people watching, getting it all going. I flip a little money, I can't make it, then I turn around and rob somebody in the parking lot. Well, now they come up with cameras, so now I have to go to Orange County or Riverside to pull a lick. Then I come back, I rent a house for a few months, and usually I don't last very long out here. Because of the way that I was raised, I always have something to prove to somebody. So somebody will open their mouth and I have to take flight, you know. And that's the way I was. I was no nonsense, shoot from the hip and knock you out if y'all didn't like what you were saying. Well, today that's not the case. I've went through, since June 9th to this present day, 18 sponsors to find the man that I've been working with for the last 4 years. He is a miracle in my life. I also chose to do something entirely different this time as well. Every time previously I was forced to go into recovery or treatment or some form or another by the system, it was always mandate, go to NA, go to NA, go to NA. Pardon me saying the other fellowship, but that's just a part of my story. It never worked for me. All I ever ended up with was a new clientele or another prison term. That's real talk radio. This time I chose to go through AA, which is the cornerstone of every bit of recovery. I don't care whether it's SMART, whether it's NA, whether it's CA, I don't care what A it is. Every bit of it stems from AA. 84 years it's been going. If it's worked this long for people through three different generations, well then, wait a minute. Maybe I should take the time to pause and maybe reflect on what's going on here. Because my Holy Spirit spoke to me on June 9th and said, hey, I got the answers. Let me handle this. I told myself I was going to do that. And I am committed to doing that. I've gone through the steps with this sponsor. Everything I've done has been AA to this point. The reason I try to shun or stay away from the other one is because I'm not trying to have a yard meeting out on the patio of the meeting outside the meeting. I'm not trying to be who I used to be. The nicknames or the monikers or, hey, don't you know who that dude is? No, today I'm Dominic. I'm an alcoholic. I'm vulnerable. I'm lost and I'm weak without the fellowship. The strongest word to me, the most powerful word to me of all words in every bit of literature that I've read is the first one in the first step. We. I had to come to terms with the fact that it's no longer me. If I want to flip it, I turn the letter upside down. I don't have that luxury. I can't afford to do that. Today, I have to get to a meeting when one of my first thoughts are trying to tell me it's okay to, oh, wow, that guy's flashing a bunch of cash. Well, that guy just dropped his keys. That guy's got his car running in the parking lot, you know. You know, because I'm really quick, I'm really fast, I make these decisions and I just jump on them. You know, I jack cars. My partners and I, we'd get so loaded, we would go and hold car theft competitions. Okay, I'm going to park mine on this street, you're going to park yours on this street, and he's parking his on that one. And we would go and jack them and then line them up for the night. If we were going to use them, we'd go to another suburb with the exact same model, switch plates, and we'll drive around for 6 or 7 months with them if we could. It's ridiculous. One thing I've come to saying a lot throughout some of my sharings and group levels, there's no hope in dope. There's no dreams in drinking. There's no retirement plan down any one of those arenas or alleys or streets. None whatsoever. I'm a living testament to that. What it was like was chaos and drama. On the streets with a lot of the female crowd, I incorporated the Nick Dramanick. The nickname Dramanick. It's like, oh God, here comes Dramanick. Okay, what's he going to do now? I'd enter a room and I'd command a presence just by entering the room. And I learned from that. I learned that people, I could play on people's sensitivities, knowing that this cat or that cat already saw me as either a threat to what he was doing, or he thought he could use me in some of his shenanigans. I would play the angles ruthlessly to life and death like levels. I was such a piece of shit. Going through my first set of steps with my sponsor, he turns around and tells me it came time to share that first fourth step. And I told him, well, wait a minute, I need you to sign this affidavit for me because there's some things in here that I haven't been convicted of that I don't want gotten out. What are you talking about? And, well, there's just some things on there that, never mind, and I tore it up. So he turns around and tells me, check it out. You don't want me to read it? You don't want to share it with me? Then go find another sponsor. I said, what? Whoa, wait a minute, wait a minute. Get some tape. Let's tape this back together. No. So he and I had a conversation. I went back and I wrote up another one. Sat down and shared it with him. And he gave me some relief to the fact that for many decades, I held myself responsible for my father's actions that day.
It was my fault, every bit of it. Our family being broken up and everything falling apart, subpoenaing all of my brothers and sisters to court to dictate across everything of society that my father was a barbaric, abusive asshole. Throughout our childhood, we had an intimate relationship with a steel-toed boot. And as far as getting backhanded, that's something we only saw on TV because all we knew was knuckles and fist. And that's what my father came at us with. I had my ass whooped every which way it could have been whooped before I left home. There's nothing that anybody's ever handed me since I've been a man that even equated to my father. Pardon me for jumping around there again, nervous up here. That fourth step, though, that I went through with my sponsor was really amazing because it gave me relief. Because it's not my fault. I have no control over what my father used to do. I do have control over how I'm going to process it and respond. Today, because of step work and fellowshipping and service, today I have so many blessings going on in my life. It's just miraculous. I have brothers and sisters in my life that I never thought would be back in my life. Bear in mind, they're all still on the East Coast because family tends to be more dramatic than necessary. And I'm just saying that's my story. It doesn't have to be yours. Today, the greatest miracle in my life, aside from being alive and being able to share with you folks, my second marriage, I have three failed marriages. First one, I was a widow behind. But my second marriage, I fathered a child with my... And I delivered him at home, thinking that was the greatest way to build family structure. Didn't need a hospital in my way. Let's start this at the house and build it from the house. Well, my forever only lasted 6.5 years. And she thought she could go window shopping and found something better. My son, though, a remarkable man that he is right now, is the greatest miracle in my life. You see, for 18.5 years, I've prayed every single day. Regardless of what situation I'm in, every single day I prayed that he and I be reunited someday. You know, I've written him letters every single year, every single quarter. Over the last 6 or 8 years, it filtered down to maybe once a quarter. But I've written him. I've known where he's always at. My resources stretch way out beyond the boundaries. I wrote him letters, you know, and never a response. August of 2015, I'm working for a company here in San Diego. And I'm driving a company truck. I'm trusted with company credit cards. I have crews working for me. I get this phone call, and it's my son. I'm like, hey, hello. He's like, this is your son, Nigel. Pulled the truck over. What? Yeah, and he goes right into it. I found a box of letters that has been kept from me all these years. I want to meet you, and I want to meet my little sister. Give me 45 minutes, I'm in a company truck, I'll call you when I'm back. Boom. I drove straight back to my place of employment. I let them know what was going on, dropped the truck off, and for the next day and a half, because my son kept getting cold feet. I couldn't force the issue, I can't impress the issue any more than I could go to his house and see him and speak to him. I've been disciplining myself for the last 15 years behind not going there because I had to wait for him to come to me. That's the type of man that I was raised as, type of person I became over the years. I'm not going to jump into your life if I know that I'm going to cause chaos. So that day that we did meet was at a Starbucks over on Elkhorn Boulevard. My son is 6'5". I gotta love the way my God plays jokes on me. Okay, so I'm a little man to my son, too. he's an amazing man. And despite how I may feel about his mother, it's only because of her that he is the man that he is today. And I let him know that regardless of what her truths may be or what my truths may be, she's the reason he is who he is. Here's the miracle. 2 months later, my son called me at odds. He was going through it. He just had a knockdown, drag-out fight with his girlfriend. He blamed me, and he wanted to know some answers. It took me 6 minutes to get from El Cajon to Imperial Beach. In the Home Depot parking lot there, we both turned off our phones and went for a walk. And we sat there and talked for 7.5 hours walking back and forth through that parking lot. By the grace of God, sharing different things that we've been doing, things that he was led to believe about me. You see, when I mentioned my little resume of convictions there, at the top of it is conspiracy to commit murder. And his mother's boyfriend after me ended up in 99, ended up having a bowling accident and ended up dead. I was held accountable. I was charged. There was insufficient evidence. I defended myself. I was acquitted. I let my son know that, you know, I really had nothing to do with that incident. But I also had to let him know about the lifestyle of some of the things involved with the boyfriends or myself. And that's a really hard truth to share with your children. I have to wear this, not only on my sleeve, but I have to be that piece of shit to my son. That I robbed people, that I hurt people deliberately on some occasions. Then he had some hard questions for me. But you know, that's the miracle of it. When we got back in our vehicles, he stopped just before we pulled out of the parking lot and came running up, pulled out, jumped and ran over to my truck. He goes, wait a minute. Where do I get an AA book? That's the miracle. By my own demonstration, by sticking to my commitment, by doing this. Because see, in my understanding of steps 1, 2, and 3, it's ABC. Admit, believe, and commit. Done. Get on with the fourth step and start writing. But to have my son in my life is, it's such an amazing blessing. Bear in mind, you don't want to lend your children your vehicles. Three months later, he was driving my F-250 Super Duty, lifted, paid off, full coverage, AAA insurance, pickup truck, and he totaled it. But he was all right, thank God. Because of technology today, he was all right. We joke about it today that, no, you can't borrow my truck anymore. But you know, on the 21st of February, my son was 30 years old. Because of being an active participant in this fellowship and knowing that the stuff that I've read here and the work that I've done here, if I have something going on, I need to talk to my best friend. I need to talk to somebody. I need to get to a meeting. I need to call my sponsor. I've been blessed with the opportunity on the 21st of February to take my son to his 30th birthday dinner for the first time in his life, in my life. Not only, I also got to take my 12-year-old daughter, his little sister. Not only, he brought my 9-month-old grandson. His name is Apollo. Could you have picked a bigger name to live up to? Really? Or is that Atlas? Anyways, for anybody young, old, new, or otherwise that got to this meeting tonight because your ass was falling off or you need to hear a message of hope and change, if this old school convict hillbilly marine can change the paradigm, and that means the way of my own thinking, to a positive influence in a positive way through the literature and these steps, then any one of you can. And if no one has taken the time to share with you today, last week, or this year, you are valued, you are of worth, please keep coming back. There may be people in these rooms that tell, man, that dude looks like he wrote, hell no. From an icon that used to go to the meeting that I considered my home group for a while, work the program. Don't work the people in it. I'll give you an example. August, for some reason, August is a red letter month for me. August last year, I was at a meeting. I was sharing at a podium such as this about how proud I was of my 12-year-old daughter. We're looking at over 6.5 years of sobriety and hardcore soldiering on through this. And some jackass in the audience asked, is she single? Every bit of institutionalism I've ever experienced, riots, gang beatings, shootings, temp murders, all of it rushed back to me. And the only thing I could think of was clearing the podium, snatching him quick enough through the crowd of people, and getting him in the back of my wood chipper. Instead, I looked at the crowd and I said, God bless you. Welcome to recovery. I pray you don't get preyed on. And I walked out of my recovery. There's a man sitting in this room today I owe my life to. Because he would call me up, say, let's go to Walmart. Let's go to the gym. He'd take me to a meeting. And that's my best friend. Because there's some things innately inside us as men or as human beings, when you fuck with our kids, there's no rules. None. Now, I come from a background of which, well, I'll feed you to the hogs. Okay, I'll go old school on you. Unfortunately, because of the way I was brutalized as a child and I was raised, I have this twisted sense of torture. I like drill bits going through kneecaps looking like melted butter. It coagulates on there. Sorry about that. Pardon the visual. That's what I had become. I'm being flagged that my time might be up. Amazingly enough, this went by really quick. But for the newcomers, for the old timers, for everyone in this room, with everything going awry in our society, this is not just a trend. This is not just a fashion statement. This is a movement that's taking our globe by storm of people that are fed up with being fed the bullshit and being handed our lives through a bottle just because it's legal. I chose to drink. I chose to make the decisions that I did. But by the same token, today, I choose to put my hand out and realize I'm responsible when I share and when I try to help somebody to make sure that I'm not creating more of a problem for them. If we see somebody down, if we know that somebody's not coming to meetings, if they're not answering our calls, I go find them. Like my best friend came and found me. Because of all the institutionalism and everything, I've lived in sober livings for the last 5.5 years. Last month, I was blessed with an opportunity to move out because, again, I'd been approached. I almost threw everything away last month. But a newcomer saved my ass at that sober living house. I had a grown man approach me in a fashion of which you don't approach a grown man. I had him say things to me that you don't say to a grown man unless you want a good old country ass whooping. And the thing that happened was my daughter came in front of my face, and my pride, my ego, and my masculinity ripped it back out of the way. But a newcomer grabbed my arm and pulled me to the side. "You're all right. Don't worry about this." I shook her off, and I looked at the dude, and I said, "You know, and this is what I get from recovery. This is what I get from my step work, from coming to the fellowship and sharing. I had the ability to pull the tools out of my toolbox and say, check it out. I'm going to be the bigger man here. I'm going to be mature about this, and I'm going to walk away from you." And I walked away from him. And the next day, I was blessed with an opportunity to move totally out of sober living. That's how my God works. He's amazing. If you don't have a God, you're welcome to borrow mine. I embrace a scripture. And I'm not proselytizing here, but in closing, I will say this. If there is ever something that you need, or you need help, you need something to hold on to till you get a hold of your sponsor, till you get to a meeting, try the Bible, Jeremiah 33:3. Call on me, and I will answer you. I will show you great and powerful things you do not know. If you don't feel some relief from that, this is the one. John 16:24. "Until now you've asked for nothing in my name. Ask for it, you shall receive, and your joy will be complete." And by then, you should have gotten a hold of a sponsor. You should have gotten somebody in your short network, because not everybody is to be trusted here. Or you should have been able to get your ass to a meeting. These meetings save my life. God bless you. I hope somebody got something out of this. I've been nervous as fuck up here. Thank you.